and gratitude to those of you who kindly sent us reception reports as well as emails from around the world, including Tausif Abbas from Pakistan, Tarek from Bangladesh, Rob Den Boer from the Netherlands, Ayush Kumar from India, Igor Belevich from Belarus, Diego Garcia Diaz from Spain, Mukesh Kumar from India, and Maurizio Vecchi from Italy. Please keep in touch with us. Dear listeners of Listeners Special, we wish you all the best. God bless you and goodbye.
Dear listeners, your opinion is always important to us. We invite you to spend just a few minutes writing us a letter or sending us an email. We will be glad to hear from all of our listeners who have any questions or comments about any of our programs. Our postal address is IRIB English Service, P.O. Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran. You can also send us emails to englishradio@irib.ir. Please visit our website at parstoday.ir/en. Our phone number is 0098-21-2201-3720. Thank you all for being with IRIB English Radio.
Questions and answers in Islamic upbringing.
I have a son. He's really in fond of football, and he's so weak in his lesson courses. I really don't know what should I do.
Could you tell me when we have to start upbringing our kids, that is, from the very beginning of the birth?
I have a little son, and he's so disrespectful. I want to know how to treat him according to the teachings of the Ahlul Bayt, peace be upon them.
Answering parents' questions in upbringing their children in an Islamic way.
Do you know what Islam is? It's a way of life for all. It is taught in the Quran for big and small.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. A very warm welcome. You're listening to Islamic Upbringing. This is your host, Zainab. In this program, we discuss your curious questions you have regarding the Islamic upbringing of your children. The answers are based upon the Quran and the narrations of Holy Prophet, may peace be upon him and his purified family. Well, today in our studio, we have the pleasure to be with Brother Miqdad. Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum salam wa rahmatullah.
A very warm welcome, brother.
Thank you. Thank you for inviting me.
So we have been discussing how do we train our children or upbring them in a way that they do not get negatively influenced by others, rather they have a positive impact on others.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. In the previous session, we talked about the creating an attitude of having a filter and teaching children and ourselves that we need to analyze things before adopting things in our lives, ideas, or moral of behavior. Then we talked about the importance of having a cup full, to have this sense of self-confidence, self-esteem,
right,
not feeling unworthy, rather feeling quite valuable, feeling that we have a positive, we are able to have a positive impact on society. This is important. It's something we create in our children, something
right,
we train our children to believe about themselves. This is really fundamental. I mean, we can't downplay how important this is, that whenever you interact with your children and with other children as well, always pass on this message to them that they are able to have a positive impact on society. We find a very, very beautiful hadith where the Ma'soom tells his children that, oh, my children, you are the leaders or you are the next generation and the community depends on you.
Right.
Really showing to these children that you're young right now, but You are the next generation. You are the leaders of the community of tomorrow, right? So it's in your hands. And so this giving importance is very important. For example, in another hadith, you find that the imam brings all of his children and he wants to make dua and he says, I'll make dua and you say ameen, because the value that Allah has given you, the worth that Allah has given you, is that your ameen can
make
my dua
impact,
be accepted.
And that to imam.
Exactly. So as much as we can, the more we give importance to our children, the more they feel that their cup is full, the more they will be able to have impact on others and less be influenced by others. Moving on from that, today I'd like to talk about this idea that one of the things that we need to create in our children, and again, ourselves as well, is this idea that we need to feel and understand the pain of others.
Feeling the pain of others.
This is very important. It's called empathy. We talked about empathy in the past as well, that you teach children to put themselves in other people's shoes. And again, this happens not just by talking to our children, but also in the different events and different challenges that happen in our lives, even for ourselves. When we're talking to our friends, when I'm talking to my wife, for example, the way I discuss, right, and the perspective from which I enter the discussion, my children are listening, right? They're taking on board how to approach these things. One of the things that we really need to work for ourselves is to be able to always put ourselves in other people's shoes, to appreciate what other people go through.
Right.
And even in the conflicts that happen sometimes, let's say you have a small dispute with your wife or with your husband, for example, or with your brother or with your parents, we teach our children that, look, appreciate what the other person is going through.
Right.
Appreciate the pain that they might be feeling. Appreciate how they felt when you said this. Appreciate that they had a long day and maybe that caused this tiredness or this illness or this challenge they had. Maybe that caused them to behave in a particular way. The more we're able to not just appreciate what other people go through, but also feel their
understand and feel
the pain that they go through. This is something very important. I'd like to share a very beautiful story about this. It's a story that happened to Imam Sajjad alayhi salam.
So let's keep our listeners that eagerness in them. We will listen to that story after a short break. Dear listeners, stay tuned.
IRIB English Radio presents A Priceless Gift to Parents. Do you have problem with your kids?
I have two boys. One is 5-year-old and the other one is 3.5. And they constantly fight and wrestle with each other, and it often gets to a dangerous stage.
My 18-month-old daughter has learned to eat by herself, and she just refuses that I feed her. But usually, all the food basically goes everywhere except her mouth. So how can we allow this strife to happen for the purpose of freedom?
Don't worry. We're here to help.
For a child, the purpose of the food is only to feed. It's also for him to learn. It's also for him to explore and fulfill the need of curiosity, fulfill the need of freedom.
Islamic upbringing. Contact us. English Radio at irib.ir.
Welcome back. You're listening to IRIB English Radio. This is Islamic upbringing. Brother McDowell is telling us how to train your children to teach them empathy so that ultimately they have a positive impact on others and do not get influenced negatively by others. This beautiful hadith by Imam Ali alayhi salam, when you see something around you that you really don't like or you don't want to hear that, say, give 70 positive assumptions to yourself. Maybe this could have been the case. Maybe that could have been the case. And that's what you said to us so far. Like, always keep yourself in the shoes of others and try to not only understand, but also feel the way they are going through. And now, Brother McDowell, you are going to tell us some beautiful story.
The companion says that I was in the presence of Imam Sajjad alayhi salam, the fourth holy imam, when a person came from amongst the Shias, from amongst the followers of the imam. And after salam and how are you, the person tells the imam that my situation is such that I have a big debt. I'm indebted to somebody. I have 400 dinars that I have to pay to somebody. And not only am I indebted to somebody, I have a qarz to return back, But I don't even have any means to feed my family. In other words, I'm in a very bad financial state right now. I can't feed my family. And I am very in need.
Right.
Imam Sajjad at this point begins to cry. فَبَكَى عَلِيُّ بْنُ الْحُسَيْنِ عَلَيْهِ السَّلَامِ بُكَاءً شَدِيدًا. The Imam is also not, at the time of the story, the Imam himself is not in a position to help. And so he starts to cry and to weep when he hears this. And so the companion asks the Imam, what made you cry? What is the reason for your tears? And so the Imam says, don't we cry when we see musibah, when we see difficulties? And so the person says, yes. He says, then what greater difficulty than to be asked to help somebody and to see a believing mu'min who is in need and we are not able to help them? This is a very big musibah.
Right.
From this we learn, the story carries on, which I'll carry on the story because it's really beautiful. But this is the point that I'd like to make over here, that look at two things that happens over here. One is that the Imam feels the pain of this person.
Right.
Right? This individual that comes to him says, look, I'm indebted and I don't have anything to feed my family. The Imam feels what this person is going through, so much so that he cries out of this, right? He feels the pain of this person. This is a normal human reaction you will find, but unfortunately in today's world, we don't see this, right?
We're blind.
We're blind. As long as my stomach is full, then I'm okay.
It's okay,
but I don't care about others.
And I was really wondering when Imam says musibah to this thing.
Exactly. And he calls it a musibah, calls it a very difficult moment. So one is that we need to train our children and this natural reaction that when we see the pain of others, it should pain us as well. And secondly, very, very beautiful, the Imam says that this musibah is also related to what? The fact that I cannot be of service. I cannot be of help. That a person comes to me asking for help, but I cannot help them. And this is what we need to, this is what we're trying to create in our children. We're trying to create in our children this idea that you should always be wanting to give, not to take. And so whenever there comes an opportunity, for example, that you have the opportunity to give, but you are not able to, this should make you feel sad, right? You should wish that, I wish I could do something. I wish I could help. I can't right now. My hands are closed. My hands don't have the power and the ability to help. But at least inside me, I feel really sad. I feel really bad. I wish
that
I could do something.
That sense of pain should be there.
Exactly. This is something that is very noble and something also very fitri as well, that we are naturally blessed with this. And it's when we go away and we become individualistic, we become too much attention to
this,
our own self.
This gets faded away.
This gets taken away.
Yeah. We'll discuss more with you, Brother Mikdad, after a short break. Dear listeners, stay tuned.
The Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam said, honor your children and teach them good manners.
Welcome back. You're listening to IRIB English Radio. This is Islamic Upbringing. I'm with Brother Mikdad and we're discussing how to create a sense of empathy in your children.
Now, I'd like to carry on the story because I feel it would be unfair if I don't carry on the story, although it's not completely related to what we want to talk about, but inshallah.
It's beautiful.
It's a very beautiful story. So the hadith carries on that this person then leaves the presence of the Imam and he goes away. As he goes away, some of the enemies of Islam and the enemies of the Ahlul Bayt decide to mock this person, saying that, what kind of Imam is this? You guys claim that your Imam knows everything, that he's able to do everything, that he's the Imam of the time. He's directly connected to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. Why is it so that you go to ask for help and he's not able to help you? This goes against your beliefs. It goes against what you believe in.
Mm-hmm.
So this person feels sad when he hears this. He feels his imam being mocked. He feels really sad. He goes back to the imam and tells him that this happened. The imam explains to him different things and tells him, I don't have anything right now, but there's 2 pieces of naan bread that is going to be my meal and the meal of my family. But here you go. I'll give you the 2 pieces of bread. You can take it. Perhaps it will help you and Allah will help you in this regard. The person takes a piece of naan and the piece of bread. And they're very, very hard. It's a very hard, old piece of bread.
Bread.
He's even thinking, how am I going to eat this? This is not even edible. This is so hard. And surprisingly, it was the meal of the imam. Anyhow, he takes this, and with the hope that the imam prayed with the dua the imam made, he leaves the presence of the imam with these two pieces of naan. As he comes to the bazaar, the market, he finds that there's a fishmonger there. He's selling some fish, and he has an old fish, right? A fish that he wants to get rid of, perhaps. And the person tells him, look, I have a piece of naan. If it's useful for you, can we exchange? Can I give you this naan and you give me the fish? And the person says, okay, fine. And he takes his fish. He gives the fish and he takes the naan. This person then carries on and then he finds a person who sells some salt. So he says to the person, can you take this piece of the second piece of naan that I have? And in exchange, give me a little bit of salt. Maybe I can put some salt in this fish and we can cook it and perhaps I can take it home to serve my family. And this person agrees. He comes home with this fish and this salt, and when he reaches home, he puts it on the counter in his kitchen, and he cuts the fish. And as he cuts the fish, he opens the fish up, and he realizes that inside the belly of the fish, there's two pearls.
Oh.
Two amazing, beautiful, very expensive pearls that he finds in this fish. Subhanallah. He is very surprised. But now he's wondering, is the fish guy happy? The fishmonger, is he happy for me to keep this? And then there is a knock on the door. He goes to open the door, and at the door, the fish seller and the salt seller are there. And they tell this guy that we saw the naan that you sold us, and this naan is so hard that we realize that you are in need of it more than we are.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore, they say that, look, here's the naan back, and whatever we gave you, you can keep it. It's all yours.
All right.
So this person takes the naan, and obviously he realizes that he's now very, very wealthy. He can sell this to get a lot of wealth. And he goes to the imam and takes back those two pieces of naan. So the same naan that he could not have eaten for a meal, which is going to be the meal of the imam, helped him acquire this amount of wealth. And the story carries on when the imam explains to him why is it that the Ahlul Bayt are like this, that they cannot use their super natural powers to help at all times, but how the barakah and the tawfiq of Allah comes to places where we don't necessarily always know where it's coming from.
Right, who knows Allah's wisdom. Thank you so much, Brother Miqdad, for being with us. Thank you so much, dear listeners. You were listening to IRIB English Radio. Until another session, wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Do you know what Islam is? It's a way of life for all. It is taught in the Quran for big and small. A way of life, a way of life, a way of life, a way of life. Islam is a way of life, a complete way.
We are with you. What about you? Fruitful Moments with IRIB English Radio.
این چیزی که انسان را مطمئن می‌کند ذکر خدا، ذکر الله تطمئن می‌کند.
Be aware, the hearts find rest in Allah's remembrance.
This is a short part of Imam Khomeini's speech. We must try to illuminate the moral conduct of affluence from this nation. Dwelling in mansions itself brings about this nature. It is possible that you may find some among them also, but they are rare. Take care that this nation, whose lower strata is engaged in activity and are toiling on the fronts and behind the fronts, continue to work hard so that they stay with the same nature of the lower strata and do not have regard for the palaces in order to continue with the proper Islamic living.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. السلام عليكم ورحمة الله. Dear audience, welcome to a new episode of Spring of the Truth from IRIB English Radio. Well, on the subject of enjoining good and forbidding evil, Imam Khomeini rahmatullah alayhi said, "You and we are all obliged to enjoin good in all matters and affairs relating to the various bureaus, offices, and departments of public administrations. And if we see someone who does evil, introduce him to the authorities who are prepared to prevent evil, and we have to tolerate the difficulties." Well, the sentence of Imam Rahmatullah alayhi has got an important lesson, and that is we should not stay indifferent in reaction to sins or evil conducts. If one invites another to do a good deed, a partnership in the reward is forged. But if in the face of corruption, deviation, and sin, we sit silently, then step by step, the corruption grows, and corrupt and seditious individuals will end up governing society. One must, at the onset of sin, not only show displeasure with the tongue and forbidding the evil, but also utilize all available legal avenues and abilities to end to continuation of evil.
يا ربنا صل على طه النبي وآله
صلى الله عليه
صل
يا رسول الله
Enjoining the good and forbidding the evil are two divinely ordained laws, and the imagination that the sin that others do have nothing to do with me. Or for example, we should not take away the freedom of others, or I am a shy and scared person, or one change won't make any difference anyway, or Jesus has his religion and Moses has his religion, or we won't be buried in the same grave, or there are others, why should I be the one forbidding evil? Or by forbidding evil, friends and customers, we will walk away. And other examples of, you know, this type of sentences that all of us have heard. You know, in that way, we won't be able to lift the responsibility from our shoulders. And these are just justifications which are wrong, and we must neglect them and go and do what is our responsibility. So enjoining good and forbidding evil is the way of prophets, even if others do not listen to them. The Holy Book of Quran states multiple times that people did not heed the warnings and the right path of the prophets and turned their backs against them. They fulfilled their religious duties and were martyred in the path of enjoining good and forbidding evil so that the truth is not lost. And I thank you for being with us in another episode of Spring of the Truth. And until another episode, I bid you farewell and may Allah protect you all.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
Palestinian journalist and media facilities. Freedom of media in the Palestinian territories is still closely related and influenced by the Israeli occupation and settlers, and their continuous violations against Palestinian journalists and media institutions. a journalist, regardless of nationality, is a job that is full of dangers and obstacles. It is also the job of truth seekers. The Palestinian journalist is destined to live within the walls of these violations. But despite these hard conditions, he or she still has determination, boldness, persistence, and strength.
The reality is that Palestinian journalists have a double suffering. On one hand, they are part of the Palestinian people who are subject to crimes and violations that qualify to genocide and war crimes. On the other hand, they have a dangerous job, especially in this hard environment under which Palestinians live because of the occupation. The Gaza Strip is besieged, while in the West Bank there is the apartheid wall, settlements, Judaization of Jerusalem, frequent violations and arrests. This affects the entire Palestinian society, and especially the journalists, as the occupation wants to black out the truth and their violations of human rights, as well as the state terrorism it practices. The Israeli occupation practiced all sorts of humiliation and subjugation methods on journalists. But along the years, the Palestinian journalist refused becoming a tool in the hands of the occupation and Israeli intelligence. And this made journalists sacrifice a lot. The Palestinian journalist plays a role as significant as that of the Palestinian politician or the fighter. To each his role. We have always seen the Palestinian journalist in the field. He would use his cameras and other tools to perform heroic and honorable achievements. He would always document and publicize the suffering of the Palestinian people, especially in the besieged Gaza Strip. He would always show the world the suffering, the incursions, the killing and torture Palestinians suffer on the hands of the Israeli occupation.
This boldness made the Israeli occupation army not differentiate between a journalist and another. So everyone is targeted and everyone is wanted.
Regardless of their nationality, journalists pursue finding the truth, removing injustice, and unveiling crimes of the occupation, no matter who that occupation may be. We have seen examples for that where reporters for networks in the United States and Europe expose crimes committed by the U.S. and other countries. An exception to this is the few journalists who are affiliated with their government, no matter who that government may be. Such journalists have a questionable credibility and are renounced in their communities. Journalists who come to Palestine are our colleagues and friends. We have to help them, and the Israeli occupation has to respect their freedom of movement and work, like it respects our freedom. But unfortunately, the Israeli occupation, as you know, does not respect any kind of freedom, and it continues its violations against these journalists. The Israeli occupation does not differentiate between a Palestinian and a non-Palestinian journalist. The non-Palestinian journalist tries to document the events as they are, so the Israeli occupation relentlessly targets them and any other journalist who tries to document events on the ground without discrimination. The Palestinian journalist works in an area rich with events. There are incursions and airstrikes all the time. And as a journalist tries to cover these crimes, he will be a target to the Israeli occupation. The Israeli occupation does not want the journalist to succeed in covering these violations, because any footage that comes out of the Gaza Strip exposes the Israeli occupation's army. That is why, in the beginning of any incursion, They fire and attack journalists to get them away from the action zone so they cannot document these incursions or any targeting of civilians. Therefore, if they injure the journalist, he would be taken to the hospital, and there will be no one to document the events, so the occupation army can do whatever they want. If journalists were there, this means there were witnesses on the crime. There are no witnesses on the crime as long as there are no journalists. Palestinian journalists have been subject to a variety of violations that reached the killing in cold blood. Other violations include arrest and detention for extended periods, especially the administrative detention with no accusation, as well as confiscation of their media coverage badges, especially in the West Bank. Journalists face continuous violations similar to the case during their coverage of the war on Gaza or the usual occupation's incursions to the Palestinian areas. Many of them were injured while covering the events, and some of these injured journalists lost their ability to perform their job.
Assassination of journalists in general is part of the repulsive occupation, because Palestinian journalists actually like the job, which unveils the ugly face of the occupation, and have determination and persistence. The Israeli occupation just assassinates them. They kill them to kill the truth. This is how the occupation envisions killing and assassinating them.
During the attack on Jabalia, there was an incursion in Azbat Abu Rabbo right behind us. We were covering the incursion on the first and second day. It seems that the Israeli occupation army did not like our movement in the area, so they fired at us multiple times. But we continued documenting this crime. I was standing right here when the tanks advanced a little further. They saw me, and right away one of the tanks fired a shell directly towards me. After I was taken to the hospital, I was surprised that the shell also hit other people and they were killed. When I woke up and became conscious, I realized that my best friend and the rest of the team were also injured. After that, we went back to the field and continued working. These violations and targeting of journalists are not going to stop us from doing our work. By the way, this building we are in right now was hit and targeted by the Israeli occupation during the war on the Gaza Strip. Other colleagues were on the roof of this building and were targeted as well while covering the events. However, none of us, the journalists, our colleagues who were targeted, their families, or even the Palestinian Authority took judicial action. So there is weakness or failure in this side. We have to encourage families of victims, civil society organizations, the journalist syndicate, and the Palestinian Authority to take judiciary action against the Israeli occupation's war criminals. These Israeli war criminals should not remain unpunished. We can generally say that these violations frequently committed by the Israeli occupation against Palestinian journalists are evidence that it tries to cover the truth and isolate Palestine from its surrounding. The occupation isolated the Gaza Strip through the siege and isolates the West Bank from time to time. Despite all these hardships, Palestinian journalists played their role in delivering the message and suffering of Palestinian people, as well as documenting the violations that exposed the Israeli occupation. Therefore, the camera was able to expose the organized terrorism, war crimes, and crimes against humanity committed by the Israeli occupation. Claims were filed on the issue of targeting journalists especially those from Al-Aqsa Association. But procrastination has always prevailed in these cases. There were also claims by local and international organizations, but these also were put aside, especially the ones regarding Al-Aqsa Association. The justification given most of the time, among others, was that a counterclaim of the one presented is filed. This is evidence that there are restrictions on journalists and their claims, especially those from Al-Aqsa Association. The Israeli occupation is a renegade state practicing state terrorism according to the international humanitarian law. However, the balance of powers with the United States hegemony blocks any attempts to sue the Israeli occupation in the United Nations, especially in the Security Council. Using Article 7 of the international law would force the Israeli occupation to subdue and abide to the international conventions and the international humanitarian law. When the issue on the table concerns an Arab country or so, the United Nations decisions are enforced immediately, and forces like UNIFIL would deploy to employ decisions of the Security Council. In the Palestinian case, everything is pending and no serious sanctions were enforced to prevent the Israeli occupation from committing more crimes against Palestinians, and this provides a shield for the occupation to carry on.
Israeli occupation's violations presented a dangerous threat to the lives of many journalists while performing their job, as they were targeted with bullets, tear gas, and stun grenades, and many of them were critically injured. During the war in 2009, the Israeli occupation targeted journalists and media facilities. One of the most important media companies targeted is the Media Group Company, which was directly targeted with a rocket.
Many of the journalists in Media Group Company were targeted on various occasions. One of our cameramen was targeted with a tank shell, and he almost got killed. During our coverage of the war on Gaza, end of 2008 and early 2009, the media group office was shelled. We were supplying coverage for 20 satellite channels and international news agencies. The place was shelled, despite the lighting and the clear signs in Arabic, English, and Hebrew that there are journalists in this place. The Israeli occupation shell, a rocket, fell only 8 meters away from us, thanks to Allah. Otherwise, we would have been all dead.
ولولا ستر الله لكنا احدث اصابات هائله او يعني قتلنا جميعا
للحظه من اللحظات لما نزل الصاروخ
At some point after the rocket hit the office, I did not feel any kind of pain. I started to wake up and look around the place. Everything was black and I didn't know what happened to us and whether both the 13th and 14th floor were hit. Then little by little, we started to check on each other and I turned out to be injured in my arm only, which is a relief. Then we found out that Ayman was hit in the head, so we tried to stop his bleeding and could barely carry him down the stairs from the 13th floor and then put him in a car and took him to the hospital.
The Israeli occupation had not had enough terrifying and scaring civilians, but it continued the unjustified targeting of the media offices and facilities. Al-Aqsa TV channel, affiliated with Hamas, was directly targeted with rockets, which made it stop its transmission, and this makes the violation reach the level of killing through both bullets and rockets.
Both Al-Aqsa TV channel and Al-Aqsa satellite channel were targeted. Al-Aqsa satellite channel was hit with an F-16 airstrike in the first hours of the war, and half an hour later, the TV channel was targeted. 3 floors of the four-story building were totally destroyed. There was nobody in the building at that moment. But all the equipment and devices were destroyed in this sudden strike. There was a new fully equipped studio we were about to commence, but it was also destroyed. As soon as the war started, we evacuated the building and moved to another place where the satellite transmission vehicle parked there was also targeted. We used other alternatives to continue working, but this was very exhausting to our crews. Our colleague Fadl Shana'a was killed by the Israeli occupation tank shells while he was holding his camera and trying to document war crimes committed against Palestinian victims. This direct targeting of journalists continues, and it is the most dangerous type of violations that the occupation practices. Other violations include prevention from traveling and restricting freedom of movement. There are plenty of examples on that, like Abdul Latif Ghaith, one of the founders of the Journalist Syndicate, who has been prevented from leaving Jerusalem for years. Journalists suffer from other violations on a daily basis while covering events in the field.
The Israeli occupation committed various violations against Palestinian journalists and reporters, as some of them were prevented from coverage, traveling, and participation. The Israeli occupation is continuing these outrageous and inhumane practices.
The Israeli occupation uses various methods to target and humiliate Palestinian journalists, like banning coverage, breaking into their offices, harassing them on checkpoints, not permitting part of the crew to pass, and preventing coverage inside Al-Aqsa Mosque. In 2010 and 2011, all equipment and part of the footage were confiscated at the gates of Al-Aqsa Mosque multiple times. Footage and filled materials were also confiscated from the journalists covering the protests in Belaim and other demonstrations against the apartheid wall and others. All the equipment and materials, like footage and films, were confiscated in all these events. The Israeli occupation tried everything with Palestinian journalists, from killing, targeting, and humiliation, but they could never break their determination and persistence. Otherwise, you would have seen Palestinian journalists run away and sit at home during the Israeli occupation's war on the Gaza Strip. But on the contrary, they have always been in the field, and their numbers are increasing. This shows that Palestinian journalists are ready to sacrifice for this just cause and to make the world see the truth. Everyone is a target, despite the immunity and protection provided for journalists by both the international humanitarian law and the Fourth Geneva Convention. There are two forms of protection. The first is that journalists are civilians and are entitled to all rights of civilians. The other form of protection is that provided by the Fourth Geneva Convention for journalists, women, and children under occupation or in armed conflict zones. Despite all that, we find that the Israeli occupation does not respect the international humanitarian law, with the hideous help and bias of the United States and the silence that qualifies to a crime. All this encourages the Israeli occupation to carry on with its violations and not respect the minimum level of humanitarian principles and the international humanitarian law.
In the past 10 years, the Israeli occupation killed about 20 journalists, in addition to committing hundreds of physical and vocal violations and continuing hindering journalists and reporters from performing their jobs. In the last 3 years, between 2009 and 2011, the Israeli occupation committed 336 violations against journalists and media institutions and killed four journalists in early 2009 during the war.
Why does not the Israeli occupation target Israeli journalists who cover internal events and issues? Why are other journalists covering events in Europe or the United States not targeted? Palestinian journalists are the only ones to be targeted, and the United States is silent about it and provides cover for the occupation from being legally punished. I believe that what stopped the war on Gaza was the Palestinian journalist, not politicians or political negotiations. Journalists played a significant role in documenting and reporting the events. They were subject to a lot of pressure. Many of them were killed, their equipment was destroyed, and their offices were targeted. But they stood tall above all that and performed a significant job reporting the reality of the events and the suffering of their people to the whole world.
Despite this horrific amount of violations of the different international conventions, the international community did not react to these violations and did not hold the Israeli occupation accountable for these crimes and killings of journalists. This silence encouraged the occupation to continue their violations to prevent journalists and reporters from covering and documenting the various crimes committed against Palestinians.
Insights into the Holy Quran.
Indeed, this Quran guides to what is most upright and gives the good news to the faithful who do righteous deeds, that there is a great reward for them.
In the name of Allah, the compassionate, the merciful, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, Assalamu alaikum. Welcome to another edition of the program, Insights into the Holy Quran by Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi, a graduate of the Hawza Seminary of Qom. Please stay with us.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. In the name of Allah, the most compassionate, the most merciful. Hello everyone, dear brothers and sisters. I am Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi with you with another edition of Insights into the Holy Quran. In this edition of the program, we'll have a look at the verses of chapter Nur, the 24th chapter of the Holy Quran, and different commentary points of these verses. Brothers and sisters, we have reached the 51st and 2nd verses of Surah An-Nur.
A'udhu billahi minash shaytanir rajim. Innama kana qawla al-mu'minina idha du'u إلى الله ورسوله ليحكم بينهم أن يقولوا سمعنا وأطعنا وأولئك هم المفلحون.
The only statement of the true believers when they are called to Allah and His Messenger to judge between them is that they say, "We hear and we obey," and those are the successful.
وَمَن يُطِعِ اللَّهَ وَرَسُولَهُ وَيَخْشَى اللَّهَ وَيَتَّقْهِ فَأُولَٰئِكَ هُمُ الْفَائِزُونَ.
And whoever obeys Allah and His Messenger and fears Allah and is conscious of Him, it is those who are the attainers.
The 52nd verse says, إنما كان قول المؤمنين إذا دعوا إلى الله ورسوله ليحكم بينهم أن يقولوا سمعنا وأطعنا وأولئك هم المفلحون. The saying of the believers when summoned to Allah and His Messenger in order that He may judge between them is no other than they say, "We hear and we obey," and those are they that are the successful. وَمَنْ يُطِعِ اللَّهَ وَرَسُولَهُ وَيَخْشَى اللَّهَ وَيَتَّقْهِ فَأُولَٰئِكَ هُمُ الْفَائِزُونَ. And whoever obeys Allah and His Messenger and fears Allah and is in awe of Him, so these are that are the victorious. So, in the previous holy verses, we saw how some dark-hearted hypocrites who were in the dense darkness reacted to the judgment of Allah and the Prophet ﷺ, and how they refused the judgment, the just judgment of the Prophet ﷺ, as though they feared that Allah and the Prophet might tread on their right. So, how those hypocrites actually treated the judgment of the Prophet ﷺ was depicted in the previous verses, specifically the previous four verses. And in this holy verse, how the real believers treat the Prophet of Islam is depicted, so that the people look at themselves and see from the viewpoint of facing the ordinance of Allah to what group they belong, so they can judge themselves. But the concerned verses describe its opposite case, that is, the believers' treatment with this divine judgment, the opposite of what the hypocrites did. So, at first, the verse says, إِنَّمَا كَانَ قَوْلَ الْمُؤْمِنِينَ إِذَا دُعُوا إِلَى اللَّهِ وَرَسُولِهِ لِيَحْكُمَ بَيْنَهُمْ. The saying of the believers, when summoned to Allah and His Messenger, in order that He may judge between them, is no other than they say, "We hear and we obey."
على مر الزمان تألقا وأضاء لي الدنيا طريقا.
We hope and pray that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala blesses us with the ability to cover more of His divine.
In this series of programs, we will inshallah discuss the Holy Quran with a thematic approach.
We will inshallah discuss the chapter.
تعلقا وتلاه في جنح الدجى متدبرا.
The context in which Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala speaks in this verse is the context of mentioning the ills and problems and evils of the people of the book, the previous nations who have received revelation, and more particularly the Jew.
Now let's listen to some of the verses of the Holy Quran.
First, let's listen to a few verses.
Now let's listen to some verses of the Holy Quran.
أنتم الفقراء
Insights into the Holy Quran by Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi, a graduate of the Hausa Seminary of Qom.
So the verse says, "أن يقولوا سمعنا وأطعنا." It is a very interesting sentence. We hear and we obey. It is really short and meaningful. And the Arabic word innama, which is for limiting, indicates that they have nothing but this to say. Innama sami'na wa ata'na. So this word innama in the beginning of the verse, innama kana qawl al-mu'minin, means this was their only word. They only had this to say. And they have only one word, and verily the reality of faith is this very meaning. Sami'na wa ata'na. We hear and we obey. How can a person who knows Allah as the omnipotent, the omniscient, needing no one, the compassionate and the merciful on all servants, prefer others' judgment to his judgment? Also, how can that person show any action but listening to and obeying his command and judgments? What a good means is it for the believer's success, and what great trial is for them? Of course they would believe, of course they would listen, and of course they would not be having any kind of insubordination, because they know he is the creator, because they believe he is the absolute cause. They have felt from the bottom of their hearts the reality of monotheism, and that is why they will not refer to anyone other than the Almighty Allah. Therefore, it is in the end of the verse that it is added, وَأُولَٰئِكَ هُمُ الْمُفْلِحُونَ, and those are they that are successful. Thank you, brothers and sisters, for staying with us. Wassalamu alaykum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Don't be saddened by what you see, by all the lies and treachery. Life is cruel, but don't worry. In your heart lies the key to unwind all the secrets. This life we see.
Thank you, dear listeners of IRIB English, for listening to us. If you have any question regarding our programs, feel free to email us at englishradio@irib.ir. Also, visit our website at parstoday.ir. Until the next program, take care.
Things always work for me, worry, and that's when faith begins.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program.
Ask the followers of the remembrance if ye know not.
You're listening to the program The Key on IRIB English Radio with Shiraz Hossein Agha, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Qom and a PhD in philosophy.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Welcome to our program, The Key, here at IRIB English Radio. Today on The Key, we are going to be looking at a very interesting question. This question is very pertinent today as a social